Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back, cause it's root for the home team. They don't win, it's a shame, cause it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Welcome to Let's Get To, the baseball podcast from the fans' perspective. Now here's your host, James Christopher.
And we are back here on Let's Get To. I'm your host, James Christopher, and I will be honest, this episode rolling into Sunday, into Monday when we started to put this together, was going to be very different than what it is, because this isn't an ending episode. It had leaked that Major League Baseball was supposed to announce the 120 teams, and then what has happened with the other squads on Monday, and that didn't happen, and now it's apparently been pushed to December 8th. So we will come back to kind of put a bow on things. But it's been a week, and it's been a week of uncertainty, and it's been a week of, you know, I think some wins and I think some losses. It does seem like, at least for now, Major League Baseball is sticking to its core promise of keeping baseball in these communities. And one of the things I wanted to kind of reiterate, not that Major League Baseball cares, but we are not going to go to a major league ballpark in 2021. I do think there'll be fans, and I will not be among them. The caveat, of course, being going to some Astros games during the week. But on the travels, I am going to focus, frankly, the company's money and my own money on visiting and supporting minor league, both affiliated and independent, and collegiate wood bat leagues. After watching what these communities have endured without having the ability to really sell a ticket for the most part, and also at the same time being there for their community, and then looking at what some of the Northwoods League teams did, and the Skeeters, and some of the American Association by creating pods and having baseball any way possible, those teams are who deserve and have earned my hard-earned dollar. If it's hard-earned, if you're a film teacher and you get to talk about Spielberg all day. So that's where the money's going for us. So we are not going to be, you know, I'm not going to go to Oakland, and I'm not going to go to Baltimore like I had planned, and I'm not going to do that stuff. And instead, that money is going to go to actually some teams that we're going to announce next week. We're going to announce a few, not all, but a few, because we plan a trip, and then we plan ancillary trips around those trips. So that is the plan. That is the commitment Jessica and I have made. And one of those leagues that we're definitely going to attend is the Northwoods League. And we do want to congratulate them on having the most fans of any organized baseball in America this year. I know some people have tried to apply caveats to that, but that's awesome. We had a great time up in Bismarck and cannot wait to get to some more Northwoods League's teams in 2021. So again, we have a packed show for you today. JD Davis from the Corpus Christi Hooks is here. We're going to be talking to a bunch of teams, including the Sugarland Skeeters and the State College Spikes and the Mahoning Valley Scrappers. And Jess Canaster is here to put his view and his eyes on what this has all been like. So again, busy show. Stay with us.
Holler and a Swaller, a chug of ballpark brew, presented by The Hitter Sports.
And welcome back here for Holler and a Swaller, presented by The Hitter Sports. Now, before we jump into the segment, I want to show off this beautiful Hudson Valley Renegades game day ball cap. I'll put it on here for a second. It's a great cap. The raccoon logo just pops, and it just sits really nicely in this black-on-black kind of, got to look a certain angle just to see it perfectly. But I highlight it because, again, this segment's sponsored by The Hitter Sports, and he gifted me this hat. He sent it to me. I got it a couple days ago, and I just wanted to, again, thank him for that. It's a hat that I love. It's a brand that I love, and we're so excited for the good people out there, for the Hudson Valley Renegades, to see them host the Yankees, and we're going to try to get out there. So congrats again to the Hudson Valley Renegades, and thanks to The Hitter Sports for getting me the ball cap. And again, the other goodies as well. So we're back here on Holler and a Swaller, and as we've been doing since August, we've been really shining a light on small breweries, on, I don't know if you use the word microbrew for everyone, I don't really know the distinction, but the point is we're not drinking Bud Light up in here, or ever, at all. God, it's awful. But and we've been trying to, again, highlight not just from Texas, but from everywhere, but we are going to stay in Texas. And as we've been doing for the last couple of episodes and what we'll also do for the next episode, really looking at some of their holiday selections. And so we have got Saloon Door Brewing from good old Webster, Texas, and we have two of their Christmas beers. We've got their Mariculus. Don't know how to pronounce it, but it's a maple and pecan Russian Imperial Stout. And then we've got their Rainiculous, which is a PB and white chocolate Russian Imperial Stout. I'm already a stout guy. I'm very excited to try both. And so we will get a couple of haulers and then some swallers out of this. But I do want to just toast, send these haulers and the swallers out to everyone in affiliated minor league baseball. I'm recording this on Wednesday night. The episode's dropping on Friday. We still don't know who everybody's affiliate's supposed to be. And the rumor was it was supposed to be Monday. So I'm sending this out to everybody. And again, watching this community, this minor league baseball community, adjust to the changing landscape of their lives has been nothing short of inspiring. So these haulers and swallers are out to you. So we'll start with the Rainiculous, and it's PB, I'm guessing peanut butter, and white chocolate Russian Imperial Stout. It's got a nice alcohol, 11.8% alcohol by volume. The Raiders of the Lost Diamond segment coming up later could get sporty. You know what I'm saying? So, ASMR. That was a good one. Oh, you can really smell the white chocolate. Wow, that is very flavorful. It's flavorful, but still feels pretty light. It's delicious. And a great can from the good folks at Saloon Door Brewing. Pig dressed like Rudolph. And now we got the Mariculus. Mariculus? And this is a maple and pecan. Again, another Russian Imperial Stout. And this is, again, 11.8% alcohol by volume. ASMR. That was even better. Oh, you can really smell the maple and pecan. Oh, very good. Very flavorful. Again, very flavorful. Kudos to the good folks at Saloon. See, I promise this is my first take on all of this. But kudos to Saloon Door Brewing. Shout out to you guys. And again, a toast to everybody in minor league baseball. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
Show me the merch. The best from the pro shop.
We are entering what is one of my most wonderful times of the year. This is why I do a baseball podcast and not, in fact, have some form of a recording career. But look, it is Christmas time, which means the boxes are rolling in. And we've got a couple of brands to look at. Two of my favorite brands. These are repeat buys for me from teams that we've already bought stuff from. And I am a sucker for a minor league team with some Christmas motif to it or design to it. I will be ordering some stuff for the Amarillo Sod Poodles. They're doing a 12 Days of Christmas thing. But I've got two brands that are here today. And the first is the Erie Seawolves. And they've got a couple of Christmas looks that I kind of want to go through before we get to the mystery box. Now, we're going to start with the Snow Wolves face mask. And you're noticing that I've got the face mask on and I'm still talking and I'm still addressing the camera and I'm assuming you can still hear me pretty well. I don't think I'm that muffled. Wear a mask so we can go to baseball games next year. I know I'm speaking to the choir, or preaching to the choir, because most of y'all do, but I love that they've adapted their regular Seawolf logo into the Snow Wolf with this little knit cap. My Canadian friend tells me it's a toque. And they have a t-shirt with it that's kind of got that ugly Christmas sweater vibe, and it says, Happy Holidays. This will definitely get worn very, very soon and very, very often. They're also rocking the I'll Be Home for Christmas t-shirt with the Seawolf with the pirate hat on. Sorry, the Santa hat on. Excuse me. He normally has a pirate hat on home plate. And one of these shirts will be worn for one of the last segments of this episode. But which one? So that's our stuff from Erie. We are really good friends with the folks down there. We love them up there, I guess. We cannot wait to get them back on the show. And hopefully we're going to get out there to see a ball game out there. Now, the next brand that we get are the AAA Omaha Storm Chasers. We've had and we'll have Marty Cordero on, in fact, this episode. We've had him on a bunch. We love the Storm Chasers. We think that they really epitomize a lot of what is really great about minor league baseball. And I did a mystery box, and I don't normally do them. It's a weird deal for me. Sometimes I love knowing exactly what I'm getting, and sometimes it's fun to have the surprise. And so I have not actually opened the box yet. I actually had Jessica untape it for me. The production in this show is very intense. Untape it for me and then refold it so now we can look inside and see what we have. Yeah, this is fun. This is fun. Okay, so let's start with the cozy. Koozie or cozy? Did we ever figure that out? But it's from the Omaha Potholes. And this was one of the best promotions that I've seen minor league baseball do, period. And they have, it's really exploded, I think 2 seasons ago, and then it continued. But love the koozie, cozy, whatever you want to call it. It will definitely go up there with some of my others. And look, the Omaha Storm Chasers license plate frame is going on the car today. I will, in fact, show an insert during this segment of it already on the car. See, we can edit stuff in later. On film sets, I used to have one of my ADs would always sarcastically joke, how do movies work? And I would tell him the editing process. I did it for 15 features. But yeah, this is it. The Omaha Storm Chasers license plate frame on the back of the vehicle of mine. I refer to it as the Millennium Dolphin. Oh, this is fun. The Omaha Storm Chasers scarf. Let's take a look at this. Going to be going to Colorado in a few weeks. Jess and I are going to finally get to take our 20th anniversary trip, and we're going to just basically, we rented a room in a resort, and we're not going out for 4 days. But I'm going to need a scarf. And you can imagine that being down here in Texas, I don't really have a lot of them. In fact, I have I think 5 scarves total, 3 of them, an Astros, a Skeeters, and this one were ballpark giveaways. The other was a gift, and the other one, don't know where it came from. Must not be that important. So I love the scarf, and I love the logo of the Storm Chasers. So we got a baseball here, and this is a baseball. Oh, this is nice. This is a baseball with all of the logos from AAA up till last year. So it's now kind of the PCL, excuse me. So it's kind of a sort of time capsule item, since we don't know if there will be one AAA, if there'll be 2 AAA leagues or 3. There's still some debate about that. So very cool. Looking forward to getting this boxed and up there. Oh, we have their shot glass, which I guess I'll put back up here. From their Copa de la Diversión identity, the Cazadores de Tormentadas. I know, I took French. I'm in Texas, I took French. I don't know what to tell you. But it's, again, a great look. Love the Copa looks. And one concern I have as we kind of move forward with this process of realigning Major League Baseball, which, let's be honest, it's not been as awful as I think I thought it would be, and I maybe sold it to be on this show. I do worry about things like the Copa Cup going away. So hopefully Major League Baseball is smart enough to know that people and fans really like it. We've got a Jeff Montgomery bobblehead. It's a 50th limited edition bobblehead. It was given away originally on June 9th of 2019. This is so cool. Excuse me, 2018. We'll definitely be getting this up on the shelf. Anytime I can get a really cool bobblehead, man, I am tickled. Look at this guy, tickled. Let's see what else we have. We have... Oh, wow, this is nice, too. So MV Sports, which is a brand of clothing I love. They do a lot of minor league baseball stuff. Really, really like it. But it is the Omaha Storm Chasers t-shirt. We'll get definitely a shot of that for the show. And then we've got even more stuff. The 2020 Omaha Storm Chasers front office. Obviously, the schedule is on the back is gone, but you can see Marty there in the center. Again, having him on the show later. And, oh, this is super cool. And I gotta wonder if this was put in for me specifically, but it says the Omaha Storm Chasers versus the Round Rock Express, me up here. And it's got Tuesday, April 14th was the date it was supposed to be played, but it says section, living room, row, couch, seat one. I'm going to assume that it was an intentionally put up here in my box because of my association with Round Rock and being in Austin and stuff. This is a class move, guys. This is great. And I'm going to be putting together my shadow box for this year and kind of reflecting on what this year has been like. And this is going in it. So this is great. And then the sad but not the sad relic of what was supposed to be 2020. The 2020 pocket schedule. So we've seen some great stuff from the Erie Seawolves and from the Omaha Storm Chasers. And then for the next episode, we've got several teams gear that we bought over Black Friday and Small Business Saturday and Cyber Monday. And I was very public with the teams we were supporting for those days. But here's the thing. If you've got a sports fan in your life, maybe not even a baseball fan, but just a sports fan, and you're looking for really cool looks, really cool, just something cool to wear that's a little different, look at minor league baseball. You're going to find a lot of neat stuff. And I can't tell you the number of conversations that I have had when people are like, oh, what's that hat? Or where's that sweatshirt from? And it's something cool. It's different. It makes you stand out. And when you're doing all of that, though, you're also supporting people like this. People like the Storm Chasers. These are all people. I've talked to some of them on the show. They love their team. They love their community. They love Omaha. If you've seen the documentary 50 Summers, you know this. So you're helping them and also getting some cool gifts for yourself or for your loved ones. So very excited to be to get this stuff out and worn for both the Erie Seawolves and the Omaha Storm Chasers.
Who's on first? The Let's Get To Local 9. Brought to you by Zoomer Sport.
So we are excited to welcome to our team of the week. We have Mr. Jordan Taylor, the GM of the Mahoning Valley Scrappers, on the show. Jordan, how's it going?
Going well. Thanks for having me on.
I'm wondering, before we kind of let's jump to the end real quick, sense of relief at this point? Just you can exhale finally? Is that where we are?
Yeah, that's where we're feeling right now. It's been a long, little bit over a year when minor league baseball or major league baseball put out that there's going to be a list of teams potentially not playing in the future. And we were rumored to be on that list. So it's been a long battle to get to where we are. But now it's exciting to know what we're going to be moving forward and get back to a little bit of normalcy for us.
Well, let's talk a little bit about you first. Then, how did you first get into baseball and end up becoming the GM of a minor league baseball team?
Yeah, I've always been baseball's been my favorite sport growing up, played it for a while. And then when I was looking at colleges, I really knew I wanted to work on the business end of baseball. And I ended up choosing Mountain Union College, which is now University of Mountain Union. And they had a great sports business program that was relatively close to where I grew up, right outside of Cleveland. So I decided to go there, and it was just a great learning experience to figure out and know about the business side of baseball. And then I had the opportunity to do some internships. I did an internship with IMG up in Cleveland, the sports agency for a summer.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And then really cemented that this is, I wanted to work in sports. So I started applying all over the country, not just in baseball, but in other sports as well, just to get that first opportunity. And then was fortunate enough to make a connection with the ownership group that at the time owned the Scrappers, and had an interview there and ended up getting my first job with the team in an entry-level sales position, and then just slowly had worked my way up throughout the organization.
One of the things that, first of all, one of the things that I've learned since doing this show, so I'm a Houston kid. I pretty much grew up in the Astrodome. I didn't discover minor league baseball until I married a girl from San Antonio who's like, no, we have the missions. And for, you know, I wish they had, I would have known about degrees like in sports management. Like I just didn't know.
I mean, I remember, and it's funny you mentioned that, it was, growing up, I would try to read everything I could on baseball. It was just where my interest was, collecting baseball cards, reading about anything to do with baseball. And I remember having a book, and it had a little segment on careers in baseball and how to get into baseball. It mentioned, you know, trying to find a school that had a degree in sports business. So as I was finishing up high school, that's really where I put my attention to, and you know, found Mountain Union. It was just a great fit and really kind of put me on my way.
So I want to talk a little bit about the Mahoney Valley Scrappers and kind of the community surrounding it, because sure. One of the things that we've all dealt with is COVID-19, where we didn't have baseball. But what I've noticed universally, particularly through the affiliated MILB, those teams didn't really stop trying to be there for the communities. How important is that relationship between your team and where you guys are at?
Yeah, it's huge. Just as you mentioned, with a lot of the teams, we want, even though we weren't going to be playing games, we didn't want to go away, and we wanted people to know we're still here and try to do what we could to still be impactful in the community. So early on, what we did, had meals delivered to first responders. Really try to highlight our corporate partners in our community, even if we weren't playing, just if they were a restaurant that they were still open or had specials going on, just to let our fan base and our social network know that, you know, these are people who supported us over the years. And this is a way to also, you know, help out, you know, during this time. And then we also to close out our year, we ran a trick or treat community event in October to close out, you know, what would be traditionally our season. So try to find ways to partner as much as we could, you know, in the community with the restrictions that have been out there.
So you alluded to last October, the list was leaked. I think I first saw it in 538, like a really small article. I will say this, that being an Astros fan, I definitely put a lot of the feet at their feet because of the way they sort of approach their minor league system. How hard was it, though, to go through what has now been over a year, 14 months, and COVID, but also still keep that focus on community? I mean, like, I can imagine it's always in the back of your minds that you might not have a team going forward.
Sure. That was always a possibility. But the goal, once that list came out, and again, there was always a lot with that list. You never knew how accurate that was, you know, throughout the process. So, well, we made the decision to really do everything we could to highlight our team, the community, and why it was important to keep baseball in this community. So, you know, our front office was, you know, really proactive in talking to sponsors, you know, political leaders, season ticket holders, and having them help us with the outreach, you know, to Major League Baseball, to the Cleveland Indians, just to make sure that they were aware how important this is, especially in a smaller community compared to some of the other ones in minor league baseball, that, you know, this is very important and want it people want it to continue here. So we really try to focus our efforts, you know, especially pre-pandemic, on that side of things, and really, you know, putting our best foot forward to showcase the ballpark improvements that have been made, you know, in the last couple of years that, you know, would keep us as a prime candidate to keep baseball in the market.
Yeah. And I think bringing up the pandemic is such an interesting part of all this, because we had House of Representative members on to wrap up our season one of the show. And then it feels like the minute the pandemic hits, they've got other things to worry about. And I feel like it was really this perfect storm of badness, I guess.
It really was. So, you know, talking with our front office and, you know, some people in the community and sponsors, you know, I thought the hardest thing we would have to go through was the Save Our Scrappers campaign.
Yeah.
In, you know, November, December, January. And then really, when you didn't think anything could be tougher than that for this particular, you know, for these teams, the double whammy of the pandemic and really having your business really being taken away from you for all intents and purposes. And, you know, that challenge on top of still pushing and making sure that, you know, we could have a team in the market really was a double whammy. And, you know, we're, as said, looking forward to transitioning out of that and hopefully by the time we start up again in June, you know, be in a much better spot.
Well, let's turn the energy up then. Let's make it a little bit more positive. I am on record. I'm not the biggest Manfred fan. I often refer to him as Manfraud. But I will say this, it seems like so far, and as we record this on Wednesday, the full list of affiliations and all that stuff is still coming out. It's still leaking out and teams are still getting dumped on Twitter. I referenced the Columbia Fireflies with that one. But it does seem like there has at least been the effort to keep teams where there were teams. And we've had guys from the Appy League on, and they're kind of excited that because you theoretically you're going to see better players than you might have seen. So where are you guys sitting with that from that angle? Because you have a whole new model that could be a lot of fun.
We do. And, you know, as we went through the process and, you know, really started having more advanced talks with Major League Baseball, and they started to share their vision for us as being a founding member of the new MLB Draft League, we just took a couple minutes to think about it. And it was like, wow, this is a really exciting concept that they're, you know, putting their marketing muscle behind and promotional expertise and, you know, tying in with some of the things that we've done over the years with as minor league teams, that this could be a really unique and groundbreaking system in the player development pipeline that they're going to have. And similar to the Appy League, like you mentioned, we've been very fortunate with our Cleveland Indians partnership and had a little over 100 former scrappers have played in the big leagues, many of them, you know, for the Cleveland Indians, you know, over the 20 plus years, which track record wise is really solid. But when you start looking and thinking about the concentration of talent that now is going to be in this league, I mean, you can really start to see we could have even more big leaguers come through this model than we did in the other. Just a little bit different way of going about it, where, you know, our affiliation now is tied to MLB as a whole, not just to one particular team. So it'll present some new opportunities, especially if you're fans of, you know, in our market, we're very close to Pittsburgh as well. So if you're a Pirates fan, you may get a chance to see the next Pirate star in our ballpark or in our league. So it's really cool and exciting. It's going to be exciting to watch it unfold over the next couple of years. And, you know, if the vision is, you know, as it's presented, I think is going to be a really positive for the communities that are part of this league.
So how is it going to work then? I mean, obviously you have draft eligible, what, juniors and seniors?
Yep.
And then the draft happens. Do they keep playing, or how does that all has that shaken out yet?
Yeah, some of it's still going to shake out. It's, I think, going to be a case-by-case situation from what I understand, because you still have – we'll start, I think, right around June 1st is what the target is. So the draft will be, I think, July 13th through 15th this year at the All-Star break, and also continue on that same pattern moving forward, so mid-July. So we'll have those 6 weeks or so before the draft. Then I think there's probably a 2 week window for them to sign players. So we'll still, you know, be able to utilize players during that time. Uh-huh. So get close to the tail end of our season at that point, you're into the last 2 weeks of the way our schedule will break down. So I think depending on the team, they may let us just keep those players for the last 2 weeks. And then you may see some fill-ins on the back end, maybe some guys who were not drafted that come in at the tail end that a team may want to take a better look at and then sign them, you know, after at that point. So I think, you know, we should see throughout the whole process a very high level of player coming through here, you know, at least equal to what we had in the New York Penn League. And the one thing that's also nice in our particular situation is these players actually may be a little closer to the big leagues than they were with us in the Penn League. While we were getting really high level prospects, with the way Cleveland was drafting in the last handful of years, we tended to have 18 and 19 year olds were our best players. And even some teams in the Penn League had much more college focus. Now we're going to be much more college focused, which ideally if they're higher level players, they're going to be a little bit closer to the big leagues. So that I think is a positive for fans as well.
And so there's, and Matt, I think that reassures my biggest concern was, how do you guys run a league if the draft happens, everybody gets drafted and they all just bounce? But you're exactly right. Especially with no short season affiliates anymore, it probably behooves teams to keep these guys playing in even after they're drafted.
Yeah. And I think when you look too at the composition of the league, I think major league teams will be pretty secure that these are all quality environments for players to be in. So everybody has a pretty long track record. You know, you look at some of the ballparks, you know, State College has a wonderful facility, West Virginia, Black Bears, their stadium's only, I think this would have been their third season. So they're almost in a brand new ballpark. We've put in millions of dollars in the last couple of years to our ballpark. And then, you know, we also have the Trenton Thunder, who was the AA affiliate of the New York Yankees. So that's going to be a higher level facility as well. So, and then Williamsport, who their facility hosts a major league game each year. So, I mean, they're all really solid ballparks and good ownership groups. So I think it should lend itself to be able to hold on to players a bit longer, but you still may have some, you know, a pitcher, for example, who, you know, may be on the tail end where, you know, they have him held out for the last couple of weeks of the year. So I'm sure there will be some of that as well.
I guess last question then, from a fan experience, are you seeing any difference in the experience? Are we still looking at the same sort of family fun, let's have a good time at the ballpark kind of thing?
Yeah, our goal from a game presentation standpoint is going to look exactly the same. So we're still going to do the fireworks nights, the bobblehead giveaways, all the fun things that people have seen, you know, in the minor leagues. We're just going to transition it, you know, over to our new league starting next year. So all of that'll stay the same. Players, you know, we anticipate being very, you know, fan friendly, just like they were on the minor league side. So I think they're going to get that great experience as well, and getting that interaction and be able to, you know, say, I saw that guy when he was in Mahoning Valley, and, you know, 2 or 3 years later, he may be, you know, the rookie of the year. So it's still, that whole system stays the same. It's just a different way of going about it than what we had, you know, before.
Who's on first? The Let's Get To Local 9, brought to you by Zoomer Sport.
All right, so we are super excited to follow back up with the State College Spikes. We've got Scott and Joe. And listeners and viewers, remember, we had you guys on right after the story leaked about the possible, what would happen to you guys. You had the Save Our Spikes initiative. Let's walk us through chronologically. So Save Our Spikes got big. People were sharing it everywhere. I know government was talking about it. When COVID happens, do y'all feel like that slowed down the momentum of the government actually being involved in all of this stuff? I mean, I got to imagine there's an extra, COVID brought an extra layer of not just no baseball, but also how's it going to affect the contraction stuff?
Well, I personally think that it probably complicated it quite a bit, just because instantaneously, probably almost overnight, I don't know a better term for it, but maybe there were bigger fish to fry at that point in time. And there was a lot more going on in the world that, you know, quite frankly, probably was more important than minor league baseball at the time, and people's livelihoods and, you know, people staying safe and making sure that the pandemic was handled and that the businesses that were affected by it were helped out one way or another. And, you know, probably went from, you know, not only the spikes needing saved at that time to just, I mean, how many businesses across the country at that point were just devastated by the effects of the pandemic. And So I think it probably just fell by the wayside a little bit for a short period of time. And but at the same time, I think politicians do realize how important these teams are to their communities, how much they bring to the table in terms of, you know, quality of life and experiences that folks can have in those communities that have teams and so forth. And the amount of good stuff that those teams do in their communities, from donating monetarily or in kind. And, you know, and Joe and I, you know, for example, we're a part of so much in this community, and there's so many folks like us across the country, guys and gals that are just ingrained in their communities. So I think the politicians recognize that, and they're still going to bat for us. No pun intended.
Joe, do you have anything you wanted to follow up with?
I just want to echo what Scott said about it. You know, it definitely, you know, in terms of a wider scale, the pandemic, unfortunately, you know, disrupted a lot of things, not just, sure, you know, minor league baseball, but we're hopeful that, you know, moving forward as we, you know, all as a nation attempt to recover from this, that we at the State College Spikes and the rest of minor league baseball can be a big help with that, and really give fans that entertainment and give them a sense of normalcy.
I think one of the things, you know, and I've been pretty open about the fact that I came to minor league baseball very late in life. You can see behind me, I'm recording from my classroom, my Astros stuff. I grew up in Houston. But one of the things that, again, reminded me about how right minor league baseball was, how active you guys in particular on social media, keeping morale up, all that stuff, knowing that we're also a small business who couldn't have customers. You know, I think you guys keeping your eye on the prize and keeping people first is really what made y'all a special organization. So we fast forward to last week, I guess, or this week. It's all time's a flat circle right now. The MLB Draft League. How are we excited about this? It seems like it could be a really great level of baseball.
Heck yeah. Aren't we, Putnam? We're really
absolutely very excited. It's tremendous to be a part of this new venture, to be a founding member, getting in on the ground floor, so to speak, with several familiar opponents like the Williamsport Crosscutters, the Mahoning Valley Scrappers, the West Virginia Black Bears. And of course, we're joined now by the Trenton Thunder as well, which will be a welcome addition, I think, for our fans to see here. And of course, there are advanced discussions with a sixth team as well, as Major League Baseball alluded to when they first announced the league. And so we are just thrilled that we can have the best draft eligible players making their mark and competing against one another for the best draft status, for that you know, future professional status. It's the highest level of competition, and it's a very intense period, and it's all contained in this geographic area here, mostly in what I guess you would call the Mid-Atlantic, but Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, all right next to one another. So it'll be fun to have that here in Happy Valley.
One of the things we talked to some of the Appy League teams when that was first announced a while ago, and they pointed out that because of their short season status before, they actually might be seeing a higher level of talented player coming through. Is that the same for you guys? Like, is it now like you guys know that these could be the first 10 rounds of, or whatever it is, of players picked for the draft?
Yeah, quite possibly. You know, the way we've been looking at it and trying to educate folks who are inquiring about what this league's going to be like, it's almost as if, rather than seeing very high quality prospects shortly after they were drafted by a specific major league team, you're going to see all these guys a few weeks right before they're going to get drafted, and not just by one team, but by any team across the country. So I really think the baseball product will be quite similar. And we've been fortunate to be a partner with Pirates and Cardinals over the years. Both were great. We had 62 total players that made it up to the major leagues in our 14 seasons. But at the same time, you know, I'm excited for this. I think if you look at the reaction, it's been overwhelmingly positive. And, quite, you know, looking at the potential outcomes at the beginning of this process, even a year ago or then when the pandemic happened, you know, who knew what was in the cards for us, for other teams and so forth. So for this to be our landing spot, to end up in a league that's literally called Major League Baseball Draft League, has the logo right in the name of the league, was probably the best potential outcome we could have hoped for sure. And from a business standpoint, the business model is almost as apples to apples too, as we could have hoped for compared to some of the other possibilities that had existed. So this one is right for us. We happen to be one of the markets that's right on campus at a major college campus in the country too. So I think it lends well to our market, maybe even, more so than some others.
One of the things that you brought up too is for example, the other opportunity could have been an independent partner league, and that maybe doesn't work out because it is a different economic model, right?
Yeah. We would, be responsible for players and coaches' compensation and so forth. And that's not a small number. And, the business of minor league baseball, we're small businesses. We're very small business. And I don't know if, everybody realizes that. Some folks maybe have it in their head that at one time we had the Cardinals resources out at our disposal, but that's just not the case. So
I was speaking to the president of the Express one time, and he said he was kept getting phone calls about why they couldn't get better shortstop play. He's like, don't ask us. Nothing to do with me. So let's look into 2021 now. Let's look at the on-field product part of it all. Will Major League Baseball be the one who disseminates the players? Will there be sort of a draft for you guys? Will y'all have any kind of say in how that goes?
Well, Major League Baseball is partnered with Prep Baseball Report on this, PBR. And so PBR will essentially be operating the league. It'll certainly be a collaborative effort between MLB, PBR, and the member clubs in the MLB Draft League to make this go. But PBR is going to be out there. Kerrick Jackson has already been named the president of the MLB Draft League, so he's really spearheading the efforts right now. And, of course, the full resources of the great folks at Prep Baseball Report are going to be brought to bear to really identify the players and get them here. There's still plenty of things that need to be worked out between now and the targeted start of late May, but certainly we're looking forward to seeing the top collegiate players from across the country come here to Happy Valley to, again, compete against one another, showcase their wares, and make the best case for themselves to be in a premium spot in the Major League Baseball draft come MLB All-Star Weekend. I mean, you could be talking because draft position, like any other sport, draft position tends to correspond with how much you make. You could see basically players against one another competing for real dollars out there, essentially. So it's going to be a tremendous new venture in player development, but also I think something that fans are going to be greatly entertained by, seeing the best against the best from across the country right here in their own backyard.
And I got to imagine some of those players might just want to walk right across campus, right? And just keep.
Well, this is certainly a great opportunity. We're right here. I mean, literally, we are on the campus of Penn State University at Medler Field at LeBron O Park. So certainly it's a great opportunity, I would say, for a great college program in Penn State. And I know head coach Rob Cooper and his staff have done a great job battling through this pandemic and even leading before it, trying to build the program. So this is a great opportunity here for Penn State, but also for other local colleges and universities around the area. I mean, we had Phillipsburg's own Matt Adams just west of us in Phillipsburg, and he ended up going to Slippery Rock University. Of course, that's a Division II school, but he was a tremendous star there. I mean, if back in the day, if you could have had Matt Adams go from Slippery Rock to come to almost literally his backyard and showcase his stuff before the MLB draft, that certainly would have been a huge opportunity. I think it would have been recognized a lot sooner than it was by all of Major League Baseball, just how great of a hitter he was. And he showcased that with his tremendous MLB career. So the opportunities like that certainly are very much in existence. And I think that's recognized by all the parties involved.
Scott, I wanted to ask about the other part of 2021. And that's the fan experience. Jess and I, God willing, and the Crick Don't Rise are coming out next year to a game. We are stoked. How do you think the fan experience will be different, or will it be? Is this going to be that same State College Spikes experience going forward? And also, partner that, have you all started looking at if you still have to do stadium, like restricted crowds, that sort of thing? I can't imagine we're going to have a shutdown again next year. I'm not even going to let that enter my mind. So have you all started putting those pieces together?
Before I get into that, I just wanted to comment your phrase you used there was a phrase that one of our staff members that was with us, I think 5-6 years ago was his last year here, but he used to always say that. Good Lord willing, and the cricks don't rise.
Cricks don't rise. I don't even know what it means. I just sort of say it.
But back to your question, as far as fan experience, we think it's very important to, you know, have a sense of continuity there, because, you know, I think the baseball will be pretty similar to what folks have come to, you know and love at the ballpark, but also the experience is just as important. And we need to make sure that that is on par and is the same that everybody's always, you know, gotten used to over the last 14 seasons. So we're hitting the ground running already. We're back to the drawing board, back to the laboratory, if you will. And we're coming up with all those fun things to do next summer. We're still going to do fireworks. We're still going to do fun promotions. We've done some of the heavy hitters over the years with, monkeys dressed up as cowboys, riding on dogs, herding sheep on the field. We do that. We shoot guys out of cannons. We light guys on fire. We're going to still do all that stuff. Beers, you could probably get a cheap draft at a draft league game still.
That needs to be in your marketing.
Yeah. Maybe it will. So we're going to keep doing all that stuff. And we recognize, that is just as important in minor league baseball as the baseball itself.
Well, guys, I just want to be honest with you. It was real important to have you guys back on because y'all definitely infected me when we spoke last time. I'm glad that we can say the spikes were saved. You and two other teams were the ones I kept watching this whole thing. I'm just really excited that there's going to be baseball back there.
Well, thanks.
Absolutely. We're excited too.
It's not going to be easy though, over the next 6 months from a business standpoint. You alluded to it with mitigation in there, but from an economic standpoint, I mean, everybody's going through this and it's not going to be easy. So just like we try to support small businesses, we're a small business and we could use our community support, which has been tremendous. And I have no doubt it will continue to be, but certainly not going to be easy over the next 6 months for sure from a business standpoint.
And that's the thing. We talked about the Save Our Spikes initiative and the momentum that we were able to generate with the help of our community was tremendous. But, even with this news, yes, we are in the MLB Draft League, and yes, we're here for many years to come. But that's not necessarily to say that we have been saved. We still need to carry that Save Our Spikes momentum, put out that SOS call, and hopefully folks will answer it as they have time and time again, before the pandemic, through the pandemic. And hopefully here as we start a new chapter in the State College Spikes.
This just in. News from around the baseball diamond.
So we're excited to have some breaking news that's been breaking for about 14 months. Tyler Stamm for the Sugarland Skeeters is here. Formerly of the Atlantic League, now the AAA affiliate of the Houston Astros. Tyler, talk to me about the last week to 10 days. Because you and I have both kind of known, and now it's a thing.
Yeah, so it's been crazy from the jump. I think the official announcement was made on that Monday. I think it was the 16th of November, so it was about a week before Thanksgiving. And since that tweet went out, it's been a whirlwind. It's been really fun. People are so excited. I know you, being an Astros fan, this is a really cool moment, especially given that you've been to our place and you've seen us in action. The fact that we get to take something that is already good and just really our owner kept saying, Kevin, he kept saying, we're just really pouring the gas on the fire at this point and just making a good thing even better. I think that's what I'm most excited for. The play on the field will obviously improve. Not to say that our play on the field wasn't good. I mean, we've had a ton of ex-major leaguers through here, ex-AAAers. So It's going to be just a whole different ball game. I hate using that pun because I'm in baseball, but it's just going to be fun. The whole ballpark will get a facelift in a lot of regards over the next few years. So again, it's just a great, great thing for not only the franchise, but the community here in Fort Bend County in the Houston area.
Earlier in the show, we had on two franchises from the New York Penn League who have transitioned to the draft league. And so from their perspective, it's not all that different. Let's talk about you for a second. You mm-hmm. actually have relationships with your players. You have relationships with your coaching staff. How hard of that, and you're a very engaging guy, how hard was that part of it to realize that they aren't necessarily moving on with you guys?
I think that's where, when this first initially happened, I remember asking Kevin, I referenced him already. I said, how do you feel? And he said, this is very bittersweet. And it's very similar for me. You know, guys, I've worked with Pete Incaviglia for 3 years. It's not to say that he's for sure not moving along with us, but yeah, there's a lot of question marks now. Obviously our players, I mean, that is a whole different, that's not going to be the same. And we're going to have a whole different crew through here. So it's definitely, it's sad. I mean, we've had guys like Albert Cordero. He's been our catcher / third baseman / Mr. Everything. Huge in this community, has really put his roots down here in Fort Bend. Now he's not going to be playing for our team anymore. So it's tough, man. But again, we're excited at the same time. So it's just trying to find that happy medium.
I think that is the whole story of all of this, of being, knowing that you're excited about one thing means being bummed about another thing, but then excited about the other thing. It's change, and change is good, and it's change is beautiful. So let's talk about how it's going to be different out of Constellation Field. You guys enter AAA baseball with now probably, just based on my unscientific polling, fourth, top four or five best parks already in the league. Why do you think you guys were so attractive to the Astros? Because you already were. I mean, the Atlantic League's already top-notch as it goes for indie leagues. You guys were already trucking along. You think that was a big part of it, just how together you guys already were?
I think there's a number of things. One, and you and I have talked about this offline, that a lot of teams are trying to not end up in really geographically terrible situations for their affiliates. I mean, you saw, I think it was last year, the Nationals AAA franchise was in Fresno, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that can't happen. That's that kind of, it puts them on the other side of the world. Now, I mean, this will really help if there's a necessary call up. Let's say the Skeeters here 25 minutes from Minute Maid have a day game. And there's an emergency call up that needs to happen or something for that night or even the next day. It's a drive. It's not a flight. A lot of these guys now will be able to buy homes, let's say, in Houston on the baseball ops side. So guys who are in AAA, their next step is obviously to Minute Maid. So why not just put your roots down here? And when you do take that next step in a year, two, three, you don't have to move. You don't have to pick up your life. So on that side, that's definitely a good move. But also, I mean, the Astros have even said it. I mean, we're a very good operation. It's very solid. You've been out here. You know, I hate to humble brag, but I feel like we do a really good job. And I think that makes it really easy too. We'll obviously have an Astro spin to what we do. There will be things that change unquestionably, but it's again, pouring gas on that fire, even on the business side. So it's a no nonsense move. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
And it also, I think also helps the Rangers out too. You're a big Rangers fan. I guess we assume they're going to shift down to Round Rock and therefore no longer be in Nashville. So to your point, it makes that geographic sense make a lot more sense. Sure. Let's talk about the fan reaction then, man. Like I know it was blown. I mean, I got to think everybody was stoked. Everybody was excited.
Yes. Everybody was, I mean, my phone did not stop ringing for about a week. It's slowed down a little bit now, thankfully. Yeah. I mean, it's always good to be getting those phone calls and be busy. But man, people are pumped. I hate to keep saying this, but gas on the fire, man, everybody's taking, this is already a great thing and it's just going to get better. Being associated with the team, this whole community, and I know you probably feel it too, even in the Austin area, is still high on that 2017 championship. This whole community still has baseball fever. And it was always there, but a winner really put that oomph into baseball in Houston. So for us to now tie into the crazy big brand that the Astros have become, is massive.
Just massive. Well, and I think also from the on the baseball part, you know, the Astros threw so many rookie pitchers who threw well, they're not all going to be on the major league staff, but I don't think they're sending them back to single A. So you're already going to walk in with a really good triple A pitching staff. I would imagine people are going to be fired up for that.
Yeah. I mean, just think about too. I mean, especially people in this community, you're used to seeing Atlantic League guys, and there's nothing wrong with that. You're seeing major leaguers, but a lot of people here root for the Astros, obviously. That's our hometown team. Now, you know, like with Yordan, he's coming back from injury, you know, this upcoming year. It's not insane to think that he might start here in Sugar Land. I mean, the the close-knit feel of minor league baseball and getting to see the stars that you're used to on TV or in that World Series from 2017 or the World Series appearance in 2019 or the deep run in 2020. I mean, the constant success will, you know, just drive people's excitement up and up and up. So, yeah.
I mean, obviously, I do pay a lot closer attention to Astros affiliates, Astros stuff. I saw a lot of cool Twitter mentions from the Fayetteville Woodpeckers and the Corpus Christi Hooks, welcome to the family type stuff. Have you heard from those guys as well? Like, are they kind of excited to see, to get a new kind of look at Sugarland?
So we've heard from them a little bit. Obviously on social media, you saw those little, how yeah. you doing, partner? I think that's what Corpus said. So we haven't gotten into the weeds. That's the crazy part is even with the Astros, I mean, we've gotten into the weeds, but we're not into the thick of it yet. So we haven't really gotten to work on that yet, but I'm positive that eventually we'll have some sort of Sugarland Corpus Fayetteville, you know, synergy between the three of us, as well as the Astros at Minute Maid.
And whatever the fourth team is, can you leak that to us? Do you know?
There's a fourth team?
Well, there has to be.
I thought we were the fourth team.
No, you guys, Fayetteville Corpus, are going to be either Quad Cities or Tri-Cities would stay.
So I don't know.
You don't know. You don't know. You can't break any news.
I'm not even playing dumb. I don't know.
Okay. And as we've learned, nobody knows. Manfred right. knows. That's it. He's got a wheel and he's spinning it. Last question for you, man. This is always the invariable thing. Rebranding. Are y'all going to do some changing stuff up? Will there be a new name? Any new insight on that kind of thing?
Another question. I mean, if you ask me any question, there's a lot of it that I don't know. And branding is one of them. You know, our brand has become such a synonymous symbol with this community here in Fort Bend County. I would love to see some Astros inspired Skeeters gear, maybe having, you know, Swatson wear a rainbow jersey and stuff like that. Who knows? I mean, it's. You know, this is a relationship that's going to last now forever. I mean,
right.
Considering that the Astros are now majority partners of our team here in 2021 and beyond, we're not going anywhere. So to say that it couldn't happen is not realistic. And to say that it could happen is unrealistic. We just don't know. There's a lot of time, luckily, to figure that out and put a lot of smart people in a room and see what we can come up with, whether that's sticking with the Skeeters, something that's been around for nearly a decade now, or switching to something else. We'll have to wait and see.
Have you already started planning your trip to spring training to get to go down there and do that whole thing? I know that's
funny. I don't know. I mean, if this virus could go away at some point, that would be awesome. I don't even know what spring training looks like at this point. I mean, it's if I learned anything from this year, it's just don't. I mean, obviously we have to plan, but I just am not going to set my expectations at any certain level. We'll plan here internally, but I'm not going to hype myself up about a sold out crowd of 7,500 for our opening day next year until we're allowed to. I just don't want to be let down.
Well, you know what? I'm just really excited for you guys, Tyler. It's been really fun to offline text back and forth to figure out what's happening. And now we know, and now we can move forward. I think it's going to be great for you, great for Sugarland, and great for the Skeeters.
Yeah, we're excited, man, and I appreciate you being our biggest fan from afar, especially the biggest one in Austin, no question.
Ladies and gentlemen, please adjust your scorecards. We have a special guest in the lineup.
So we're excited to welcome back to the show, good friend of the show, J.D. Davis of the Corpus Christi Hooks. First, J.D., how are you? How's everything going with the pandemic down there?
Yeah, you know, we're doing well. We were talking about before we started recording here, we're using this time to do some ballpark cleaning. And, you know, it's back in our normal off season where we kind of do this anyway. And so we're trying to make sure the ballpark's in good shape and looking to get ready for 2021.
And we were all supposed to be at the winter meetings this week. Was it this week we were supposed to be at the winter meetings? And now I'm really bummed.
It's such a bummer. You know, missing that and missing the Innovator Summit this year. Those are, you know, two of the highlights of it's really like a big family reunion and a chance to kind of see everybody and all those people that I feel like I'm really, really close friends with. And we only see each other in person, you know, maybe once or twice a year like that. But, you know, we're so close because we live through the same sort of scenarios and same situations and share things all throughout the year. Definitely a big bummer we weren't able to do that this year.
So I wanted to have you on and just a little explanation for the viewers out there that maybe don't always know the difference. And not not even not every, but most affiliated minor league teams are not owned by the parent club. I don't know if you've seen that the Staten Island Yankees today announced they will cease operations. They are not going to exist anymore. The Hooks are owned by the Astros. So as we've gone through this, there's really been not been a question. I guess there was a rumor for a second that y'all might be AAA. I read that. But essentially, you all knew you'd be there.
Right.
Watching all this from sort of that vantage point, and I know like the Woodpeckers have the same one. I know the Crawdads, is that what they are? Rangers? Mm-hmm. Hickory Craw, yeah. All have the same in the same boat. What are your overall takeaways from this whole realignment that we've seen?
Well, you know, we were just talking about the winter meetings and talking about kind of all of our friends and you know, people that feel like family that we see. And so, you know, that's my first kind of my first reaction as just a person is saying like, you know, I know how hard people work across the country. And like you said, you know, I don't think we weren't really sweating it personally saying what's going to happen to us. But you know, we're worried for our friends and family members that work in minor league baseball and really want what's best for the sport and what's best for them. And, you know, hoping to come up with something there. So it's been, it's incredibly tough. I can't tell you the number of text chains or phone calls that we jump on and just somebody saying, hey, have you heard anything about this? Or, you know, what are you thinking about this latest news or that and different things. And it's a really, really tough time for the industry. I had a bunch of friends in the minor league office that we, you know, got to know over the years and with the minor league office closing and kind of seeing what's their next step. Well, you know, what are they going to do? Just hoping that they're able to stick around in the sport and do something because they're really, really great people that really, really care a lot about baseball.
One of the things that I think you kind of hinted at is I think part of this issue, and I could make the joke about how the Astros handled 2017's news as well. It's not been handled from a public relations perspective very well. Stories are leaked. The Columbia Fireflies had the best reaction by tweeting that they just got dumped on Twitter. We had them on the show last. They were fun. But, you know, you're in the Astros system. The Astros still don't know, and I honestly think they don't know. I don't think right. that Jim Crane knows. The Astros don't know if Quad Cities or Tri-City is staying or if it's another group, and therefore it's another group of people that still don't know if they're going to have a team.
Yeah, and I think the disappointing thing is that, you know, a lot of this is like really it's to, you know, COVID has not helped any of this. And I think, you know, that's what's frustrating on the minor league side for a lot of these teams is that it felt like, well, we were going to, you know, this discussion was already happening, you know, 12, 13, 14 months ago. And we were going to be able to know this, hopefully, you know, in April, May, June, something in that time frame, and kind of have a plan going forward. And then we have this pandemic and it basically throws all of Major League Baseball's plans kind of out the window. And they have to focus 100% on how do they get a season? How do Right. they get in their postseason? How do they do all that? And the minor league stuff, I think, got, you know, put on the back burner maybe, or just wasn't, you know, there was more pressing stuff that they had to deal with. And so now we have this slow trickle of information and you have a team finding out here or a team leaking something, you know, there or whatever it is. And I think that adds to that anxiety that you see, you know, teams that are just waiting to know what their fate is and try to find something else. And, you know, lately you've seen Major League Baseball try to, you know, squeeze it, you know, all that information, say, you know, nothing else, like, you know, all the stuff that's leaked out. It's like, we can't fix that, but like nobody else. And you know, they've had some success with that. And then there's still other stuff that keeps trickling out. And so it's an unfortunate situation for a community. You weren't able to celebrate this last season if this yeah. was their last season, you know, and that stinks. Like there's nothing about that. But then, you know, on, like you said, Columbia hearing some of that news, it's like you don't even get the chance to kind of craft that message for your community or learn that. And it's unfortunate and it's really disappointing. And I feel for those teams and those people so much.
Yeah, I thought Round Rock did a pretty good job of adapting quickly with what felt like they didn't go Trenton Thunder where they light the world on fire and they weren't as funny about it. I want to go to look at a couple of different scenarios that have happened that again, the Valley Cats or the River Bandits might be living and kind of get your take on those. Most of the New York Penn League is now going to become part of this MLB draft league. How hard do you think, or will it be a big adjustment for them operations wise to transition from being an affiliate to sort of being a collegiate summer league ran by MLB?
Yeah, I think, you know, and not knowing kind of how some of those conversations have gone, I'm, you know, kind of going to speak a little bit blindly on this, but I think, you know, one of the things that people don't realize when they think of minor league sports in general is that, like, we don't make any sort of player decisions. And so, you know, understanding that the league is still going to kind of run the player operation side, but it's just, are they going to run 100% of that? Or is there stuff that they wouldn't have been doing in the past, you know, operations wise, that they're going to have to pick up for the players or whatever it is? That's probably the biggest thing when I think of about it, because, you know, we don't really have anybody on our staff that's making sure that stuff is, you know, Houston takes care of all of that. It's not something that locally, you know, we're handling in Corpus Christi when you talk player moves or, you know, making sure that guys are where they're supposed to be. Our clubhouse manager, you know, kind of helps. He gets the word that this guy has a flight at this time and he needs to get there, but we're not booking flights. We're not, you know, we're not really arranging that. It's once they get here, we make sure they get to where they're supposed to be and that sort of thing. So, you know, that's probably a big question. If I was in that front office and I'm like, well, you know, is what's changing there? How is that going to be different? You know, I think talent wise, I think, it, you know, there, it's going to be different in the first couple of years, but I hope, you know, as a positive side, I hope that those communities can kind of embrace that and see it as something that's unique and something that's a little different. And, you know, some of the best quote unquote, you know, minor leagues, you look at like Cape Cod League or something like that, yeah, that is the college, you know, would bat league. And I, you know, when I was a kid, my parents, we did a summer vacation up in the Northeast and went to go watch a game up there, and it was amazing. And, you know, like really loved it and would love to go back, and know a ton of people that have worked in that league over the years. And so, you know, if we can recreate that without, you know, without hurting Cape Cod, and now we've got another one that's something similar, and, you know, can a rising tide kind of lift all boats in a situation like that? That's, I think, the hope for me at least.
Yeah, my thoughts went out to the Cape Cod and the Northwoods League, although I think they'll be fine. But some of the smaller ones, you know, the one we have here, the TCL, might not be. Right. Now, let's flip it then. So the Pioneer League, now they're going independent. Like, how different of an adjustment is that for them? Because now you are worried about those player decisions.
It's, yeah, I mean, you're talking a completely different ballgame. And I think, you know, see, you talked about the TCL and seeing teams, you know, Round Rock and San Antonio and Amarillo, you know, kind of dipped their toe in that because they had to this year, and figuring out, you know, how do you get players, and how hiring a manager yourself and coaching staff, yeah, and all that sort of thing. And they, you know, did some unique things. I know, you know, most of those teams kind of had different situations and things that you wouldn't have seen in kind of a normal year with those sorts of things. So that's a whole new ball game for those folks. But I think each market is really different. You know, there are a lot of teams, that I just marvel at the work they do with two people in the front office, and, you know, the, you know, full-time people that are working, maybe it's one person, and they, you know, put on this great experience for their community. Whereas in Corpus Christi, you know, it takes 30 of us to do it. We feel like, you know, we're like, how are we even, you know, we need more than that. We can't even manage all this stuff. But, you know, it's just each community is a little different. And so I think knowing people in minor league baseball, I'm always going to bet on the minor league baseball, you know, operator, because they're flexible. They work hard. They're dedicated to the sport. They're dedicated to their community. So really, I have no doubts that those teams are still going to be successful.
What excites you about the Skeeters kind of joining the Astros family? I don't know if you've been out to the ballpark out there. It's a beautiful indie ballpark. What kind of gets you fired up about that? And why should Astros fans be excited?
You know, I'm really excited because, you know, if we ever go up to Houston, we go visit, it's, we drive right through Sugar Land. So we see everything. I think it's great. You know, it's really solidifies the fan base here in South Texas. And so we're excited to have them a part of it and excited to see, you know, what they're going to be able to bring to the family. We've loved, you know, Fayetteville, you know, joining, and being a new team, but bringing that team into the Astros family and into the fold and being able to do that. It's great for us when you talk about kind of a staff standpoint. It's great to have that because we can jump on a call and immediately have somebody that speaks the same language as us that can help out with things or we can pitch things off. And also we've had several staff members that, you know, leave the hooks to go for a new position in Fayetteville because there was a chance for them to kind of grow and take, a management position or vice versa. Same thing with Brady Ballard joining us from West Palm. And he's here in Corpus Christi with us now. And so I think the more that we can do that and kind of expand the Astros family, I think it's great. And it's really, really looking forward to kind of getting to know those folks and hopefully having a good partnership.
So I guess, there's always this, because you and I both talk the language of film, and you're a Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm sure there was a moment of trepidation when Disney bought them and you thought, what's going to happen?
Right.
I have that trepidation with Major League Baseball running the MILB. Do you envision any of my fan experience being different? Like, do you think are they smart enough to realize COPA works so that stays? They're smart enough, or are we looking for something different, do you think?
Well, okay, so I think the good thing, we talked about minor league baseball operators being, hardworking, dedicated to their community and everything. I also think, we're stubborn. And so I think if Major League Baseball does come in and they say, hey, we're going to try, I wouldn't say, I'm not saying there's going to be a revolt or anything like that, but each community is different. And we haven't seen anything, coming from Major League Baseball that's, really trying to clamp down on anything or, limit what we want to do. And I think, I don't foresee any of that happening with Major League Baseball. I think they've got, enough on their plates at the right. Major League level to pull it off. And they know that we're, we're 130 whatever different markets and everybody's, a little bit different. So I think that the experience is still going to be, what you're used to and what we've seen in the past. I'm hoping that we're able to kind of expand and do some more big league like things. And I don't know what that looks like right now, but I think I'm hoping that we can see some of that translate down here. And maybe there are more league wide initiatives that we can, get in. Maybe it's just the Texas League or it's across AA or something like that, that kind of brings us together even more than what we've done in the past.
Well, that definitely has me feeling a lot better. He is JD Davis of the Corpus Christi Hooks. JD, again, thank you for being such a big part of season two, and we'll see you next year.
Absolutely. Thanks. Have a great day.
The Minor League Mind with Jess Canaster.
All right, so we are jumping on with Minor League Mind, our expert in minor league baseball, Jess Canaster. And Jess, best laid plans go awry. This was supposed to be our let's put a bow on this whole thing and have some fun on the holiday special. And instead we'll put a bow next week, but let's talk first of all about some of the reactions to the realignment, the contraction, not the reactions. I'm sorry. It does seem like for the most part, Major League Baseball has met its commitment for the teams announced to keep baseball in those communities.
It has. I think, there's all of this has drawn attention to the existence of other leagues besides affiliated minor league baseball. I'm not sure necessarily everybody in affiliated baseball knew from the Atlantic League or from the Frontier League, American Association, or any summer collegiate league. But now everybody is kind of up to speed on everything else that exists outside of the umbrella of affiliated baseball. And that is, I think it's good to be aware of the existence of all of the organizations that exist outside of minor league baseball, but also that umbrella as designed by Major League Baseball is expanding to try and swallow everything up. So, those other fledgling leagues are now partner leagues or perhaps as it pertains to like summer collegiate strictly in the crosshairs of Major League Baseball moving forward.
And to your point, the movie Summer Catch only grossed $19,753,000. So you're right. Nobody knew about collegiate summer leagues until now. I of course kid. Yeah, it's interesting because we talked about this online, and I know that none of us know, and all we can do is take the best guess. And it does seem like the collegiate leagues that are maybe the most prominent, so the Cape by reputation, and I think the Northwoods League by both organization and experience are probably the top two, and probably are going to be okay. But the TCL, the Prospect League, other ones, do you feel like they're going to, I mean, is it the kind of thing where there's enough baseball players and they weren't getting prospects anyway, or do you think they should be worried about not being able to field teams and exist?
I mean, there have always been, or not always, but there has been, especially the last few years, I think, thanks to the, specifically the Northwoods League, showing that you can succeed in summer collegiate baseball, basically finding your local minor league parks or former minor league parks that are from the 30s and the 40s, the WPA projects that still exist and, you know, can be slapped together with a little bit of paint, and you can make money playing summer collegiate baseball. A Northwoods League type thing kind of helped. There's the Expedition League in the last couple of years that got pretty big, that shares a similar footprint with the Pioneer League in that sort of Big Sky region. There's the Mink League in Indiana, Kansas, Nebraska, and Missouri, maybe. But there's all of those, there's all of these smaller leagues that have been in existence for the last 15 or so years. There are a lot of college baseball programs. It's not just Division I, and then a couple individual Division II programs that produce good baseball players, even though now with a 20 round draft, you will be harder pressed to find Division II and NAIA schools and even Division III schools producing major league talent. But I think those leagues are going to be the first ones to go. I think the ones that we've heard of, like the Texas Collegiate League and the Prospect League, which plays in a similar footprint to the Midwest League, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, that area, and the New England League, the Perfect Game, Perfect Game Futures League. Like I said, there's a lot of them, but I think the ones that we've heard of and in bigger footprints will survive just because there's a lot of college baseball to go around. But I do think that is firmly the direction that Major League Baseball is headed in terms of who they can swallow up next.
So you could see them co-opting the Northwoods League and making them a partner collegiate wood league or something like that.
And I think it's going to kind of be, and as we're seeing with like the Staten Island Yankees or other organizations on an individual basis, I think we'll see it on a larger scale league by league basis of kind of join us or we will crush you.
So, I guess then is there an angle to where with the shorter draft, which therefore means really good ball players with no place to go, does that in fact maybe help some of these leagues out that now they maybe become more important in the ecosystem of either not just being to up a draft status, but to create enough game tape that you can be signed as an undrafted free agent?
Well, I think the shorter draft will play a part, although Major League Baseball talking about potentially allowing minor league organizations to have 180 players.
That's weird.
Weird because that's a number that I believe is pretty similar to what currently exists, which, you know, that blows a giant hole in the whole we can't pay enough players sort of thing anyway. But let's put that aside. To the question, I think it really is that these partner leagues are going to be, they're basically going to be farm teams. They are going to be farm teams that aren't paying their own players, same as before, but now Major League Baseball is not going to be paying these players either. They're going to have the opportunity to have scouts in place. Like I believe with the draft league, what the New York Penn League is becoming, I believe I read that the rosters are going to be decided upon by Major League Baseball scouts. Or Major League Baseball teams. It's not going to be those individual organizations designing those rosters. So you're basically allowing these players to have an opportunity to play under scouts, at the major league level, maybe even play under some instruction. We'll see how that works since it's a Major League Baseball partnered league. But now these are guys, at least with that league, eligible in rising seniors and rising juniors and rising seniors who will be playing in this league. Rising seniors and graduated seniors who will be playing in this league, and they won't be being paid for it, but they'll be playing to try and become a major leaguer, which that's kind of what a minor league player does. They play to become a major leaguer while being watched by Major League Baseball. So I don't fully understand.
Let's pivot to a different league, though. The Pioneer League is becoming a partner independent league, which means they are responsible for paying those players. You know, the draft, like the part of the whole reason why you don't pay a draft in the draft league or the COD league is it's still collegiate athletes, and that's actually an NCAA violation, not a decision necessarily. Now, it's a decision they take advantage of, obviously. But not paying the Northwoods League, not paying players is because of the NCAA. It has nothing really to do with the Northwoods League. Now, Pioneer League, though, becoming an independent league like the Atlantic League or the American Association will have to pay players. There's also been this rumor that MLB affiliate can loan players to these. I mean, what have you heard about all of this this mess?
I think, you know, that in itself is kind of a tactic we've seen a lot in the news lately from things outside of baseball, shall we say, where it's just, here's all this stuff all at once. You figure it out. Wait, you can't? Not our fault. And so, you know, everybody obviously is waiting.
Count the count. Sorry.
Well, I mean, I want the count to be at 120 and I want to know what the 120 are. But I think that's what everybody wants right now. And so anything else, all these other details, like, oh, okay, that's cool. But what about the 120? And so these other things like loaning players, that kind of sounds a little similar to a minor league team because you're getting players from somewhere else and you're not going to pay them, but they're going to play in your uniform. So I think, you know, it could be, assuming we actually find out by next Tuesday, which I've seen, you know, just like it was December 1st, December 2nd, there we go. Already, I think, after seeing the initial December 8th, it's now December 8th at the earliest. So whenever we find that out, then I think we can go back retrospectively and look at the things like loaning players or anything like that. I do think the Pioneer League, though, is well set to be able to still be affordable to its fans because they will have to take on that additional cost of something like $200,000-$300,000 a year. Or so for players. I do think that they, as a partner league, and I think that's what we'll see for the American Association Frontier League and Atlantic League as well, the other partner leagues, that they may have some players sort of pushed in their direction to then sign. Like the player pool will be crafted, and then the individual teams can just bobbing for apples style pick out whoever they want. And then pay them that way. And I do think the Pioneer League is better set up than some of the other would-be independent leagues. Like the New York Penn League had tried that, or the Appalachian League had tried that. They might have struggled a little more just because the Pioneer League is so isolated from minor league and professional baseball otherwise, that it's truly the only game in town. And a lot of those cities have had minor league baseball for a long time. And so they probably won't care too much as long as the baseball is still enjoyable because they still have a team, as has been for the last however long.
And I don't think we're going to see a real drop down in quality of baseball at any of these levels. And I think one might make the argument that for some of these low A teams, like the Pioneer League used to be, right? They were short season. Is that correct? No, they were full season low A, right?
No, they were rookie ball. They were rookie short season. So there was New York Penn League, Northwest League, and then they were a step below.
So I don't know that you'll see drop off in talent. And I think the New York Penn League becoming the Strat League actually will see an increase in talent, because oftentimes we talked about last episode, a lot of times best prospects skip those first couple of rungs on the ladder. I want to ask one quick question that's 100% sarcastic, and then we'll finish up on a real topic. But why is it that if Rob Manfred and people can't handle a electronic sign stealing league-wide situation that they helped create by giving them video without somebody to watch them, why do they think they can run baseball at every level? Like, what part of them is like, it's like how Westmoreland screwed up Vietnam, so he became Secretary of Defense. Like, you fail up. What is happening? By the way, that's a great reference. Yeah.
I think if you have, those two things go hand in hand. If you mishandle a situation, you could that maybe shouldn't be, or it's not that hard to handle correctly. So if you mishandle something that's easy, you may not have the understanding that you screwed it up in the first place. And so you think you're doing the right thing. Like, oh, no, we solved this. See, everybody's mad at the Astros. Nobody cares about anything else. And we did it. Okay, next thing, let's go.
We win.
Yeah.
But let's actually talk about something real. And that broke just before we got on, is that according to a letter published on their Twitter account, the Staten Island Yankees have ceased operations and are essentially going after the Yankees in court. And a couple things. It seems like they would have been a natural fit in the Atlantic League. Why do you think that was not the step they took?
I think that's something that we'll have to dive more into, I think that's something that like media will dive more into once the future of minor league baseball is settled. And I do think it's a really interesting story, because I think you're right. They're a perfect footprint, or they're in the perfect spot for the Atlantic League. You have teams in Pennsylvania right nearby. You have the Long Island Ducks basically down the street. I mean, I don't know my New York boroughs very well, but it's the same area ish. And so you have that opportunity to develop something there, and maybe in the long term that could be the route they go. I don't think the door is closed, although perhaps maybe the Yankee Staten Island baseball team, that the best way, you know, that they maybe don't want to join the Atlantic League because they're now partnering with Major League Baseball. And at least right now, that partnership kind of rubs them a little raw, since they still haven't, apparently, according to their Twitter, haven't heard anything directly from the Yankees. The news broke, what, 2-3 weeks ago now?
Yeah,
that the
yeah.
Yankees were going to reorganize their farm system. They were going to drop Trenton and Staten Island from their developmental system. And that's been known, and it was mocked thoroughly of, hey, you know, don't be the Yankees. Talk to your minor league affiliates or your former minor league affiliates if you're not going to partner with them anymore. And I believe the whole moratorium on teams leaking that information out was a result of the Yankees doing this. And yet they still apparently haven't talked to Staten Island. That's just miserable. But again, that goes back to the last question. If you don't realize that you are a terrible manager, you won't realize when you're mismanaging something.
Okay.
And that is just something that is remarkable in how poorly that has been handled. But, you know, it's one leaf off of the whole tree of crappy handling of all of this.
All of this. I guess my last question then, Trenton Thunder going draft league as opposed to Atlantic League. So I think you and I both thought Atlantic League was where they were heading. They are they've got a bigger ballpark than what you are going to see at the draft league, all that stuff. Did that surprise you?
That to me goes back to the idea from a previous question of kind of kissing the ring, you know, join us or die. And if a team like the Thunder, who have been one of the top attendances in the Eastern League and one of the better attendances in the in Double A altogether the last few years, especially playing a really nice ballpark, Arm & Hammer Park. If they have no option but to do that, then that kind of sets the tone for how realistic it is for other teams to go independent, fight the system, or any other option besides assimilate to Major League Baseball the way that Major League Baseball wants on their terms. So yeah, I was very surprised by that, because having worked in minor league baseball, I thought that there would be, it seemed realistic that there were options for them. And I don't know what it was really that threw them over, because they're going from a 140 yeah. game schedule. They had 70 home games. They're now going to play a 68 game schedule. So you lose one more. This is my college math. If I can speak it, you lose one more than half of your home games. You go from 70 to 34. And that's a lot of revenue lost. So maybe we'll find out at some point in the future, there was some money involved to help grease the wheels to the Thunder making that decision. I think that's something we're going to see play out on the other side of the country with the Fresno Grizzlies, who are currently trying to figure out their future in minor league baseball or not. And the whole financial subsidy or financial bribe, I guess, aspect of it could be something that we might find out existed at some point in the future.
All right, then really and truly, last question, promise. Right now there are five teams sitting in the MLB Draft League. Who do you think the sixth will be?
Well, if it's not Staten Island, I think there's still the chance that it could be and maybe should be one of the teams in upstate New York. I know Albany and Batavia are Auburn and Batavia are not talked about as continuing on. I think Tri-City has a good shot at that. I think Tri-City could also potentially go to the Atlantic League if they wanted. Although when you go from playing a short season, you're not playing in April, you're not playing in September, when that's a part of the country that can't necessarily handle or doesn't want to handle playing baseball outdoors yeah. that time of year. Wink, wink, Iowa in April, awful. Instead, you have the opportunity to go play in this league. You're not paying players just like before, and you're playing a schedule that's going to have you asking people to come spend money during the warmer months of the year. And so I think that kind of makes sense, especially for any former New York Penn League team. Lowell, I could potentially see going that route as well, just because they get to keep some of their same rivalries with teams they had before. And they get to keep playing baseball, which I think at the end of the day is the thing that will win out because of what they get to keep doing for their community, regardless of who the players are or what level they're playing at.
On deck, the Let's Get To interview, brought to you by Marco Fine Arts.
All right, so we're excited to be wrapping up the show with Marty Cordero of the Omaha Storm Chasers, friend of the show. You know, Marty, we're going to bring you on to kind of wrap this thing up and to finally get a look at what minor league baseball is going to look like. And now we can't do that because it's been delayed. What is your just overall take on what's gone on, how it's been announced, and like the Staten Island Yankees news that they're just going to basically shut down, which to me is, I think, really epitomizes the tragedy in all of this.
Yeah, you know, there's so many moving parts geographically, monetarily, variety of communities, variety of levels, classifications. It's complex. It's very complex. And I saw the Staten Island release yesterday, like everyone else did. And it's sad, you know, and I tweeted that out. You know, I didn't say this is MLB's fault. I didn't say it's Staten Island's fault. I didn't say it was anyone else's fault.
I just said it's a sad state of our game because that's one club, and who knows how many more that's going to cease to operate. Whether they were going to be, you know, have an opportunity to be whatever the new affiliated is. You know, that word is probably
gone.
Very 2020, yeah. Which might be a good thing. Who knows? And you know, but they're not going to be an independent club. They're not going to be a dream league, a draft league, a wooden bat league. I mean, I can't even keep up how many names we have now. That's, you know, we're all going to need a Bible just to know the new context of professional baseball in the baseball world. But, you know, there's a lot of teams, a lot of communities, a lot of local leaders, a lot of municipalities. And then you think about all the staff, even here, you know, in Omaha. We're comfortable where we are with the Royals. We're excited to see what the future holds. But, you know, 2/3 of our staff has either moved on to other jobs or they're waiting to see when they'll be brought back here in Omaha with the Storm Chasers at Warner Park. But we're waiting on a schedule. You know, not only are we waiting on an agreement, we're waiting on a schedule. And normally we're way past planning 21 and we are already beginning to plan 22. With an eye on 23, and we don't even have a schedule for 21 yet.
Maybe let's jump on that for a second and illuminate my listeners who realize that Warner Park isn't just a ball field. You do other things. And so how hamstrung are you not knowing exactly when the Storm Chasers are playing in 2021?
Well, for night events, we're locked down. And I say that lockdown, meaning we're really not scheduling anything else. We opened our soccer world this year and our ownership group jumped in and purchased an expansion franchise, started an expansion franchise. And I'm fortunate to be part of the local investor group there. And Union Omaha was one of the few teams in the country back in late July, early August playing in front of fans. We learned a lot, good and bad. But you know, we ended up having 8 games. That's normally a 16-game schedule plus playoffs plus exhibition. Well, we can't even begin to set a soccer schedule because the baseball schedule needs to come first. And then we did about 179 soccer special events this year. Well, we can't begin to book any nighttime events. We've booked walks and runs and some charity morning events and, you know, swap meets and toy sales and those things for AM here at the ballpark. But anything that's PM – on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I mean, I a friend of mine is you know, signed Sam Hunt and has promoted Sam Hunt for years. I used to play in a band in North Louisiana with Brad Blanche, and Brad's messaging me, "Hey, when's a minor league baseball schedule coming out? Because, you know, we're looking at some dates throughout the country." And of course, obviously, I have a real personal interest in that because we would love to host a concert of that magnitude here at our ballpark. But we can't even begin to talk weekends, much less specific dates. And it does completely change not only what we're doing for our primary business, baseball, but again, our secondary business, soccer, and also our third business, which is special events.
You know, one of the things, as you can see behind me, I'm doing this from my classroom. I'm an Astros fan, and I will renew my promise to Jim Crane that I will be your PR guy for free because you're not good at talking about anything. But I wonder how much, like, it's so 2020 that MLB has handled this with a sledgehammer. There seems to be no compassion. There's no, you know, we joked, we had the Columbia Fireflies on and they publicly joked on Twitter that they got dumped on Twitter. How much of it is, like, why can't we just be civil about it and say, listen, this is what we want to take our business and we'll just be upfront instead of really just acting like I understand that they don't have to care what the minor league owners think, but why do they have to act like they don't care what the minor league owners think?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, John, I assume you had John on. He's a personal friend and, you know, they've been through some things, but they handled it so minor league baseball. And then Myrtle Beach yesterday had a partnership announcement and they announced a number of T-shirts that had a number of partnership. If you haven't seen it, go to Myrtle Beach's Twitter account. They, you know, Ryan Moore, they did a great job. So I think teams are we are all doing the best we can. You know, we're trying to be respectful of the game because the game needs to be put first. What I would answer to you is the game's not being put first with the process and with 2020. I call it like it is, not like I see it, but like it is. And this is about business. This is about reinventing the business of professional baseball and one baseball, T-ball to the Hall of Fame. And I'll leave it to your listeners to decide if someone controlling T-ball to the Hall of Fame is a positive thing or not. But, you know, look, MLB has a job to do, and that's to create additional asset and franchise value for 30 owners. That is to enhance and increase media rights, television rights, values, and also monetize best they can their marketing assets. Marketing assets are players. And, you know, if you're controlling more players, you're controlling more markets, and you have more under your umbrella, it makes sense. I get it. I absolutely understand that. And those are all things that are capitalistic and are very American. But what I would tell you, there should be a component that does look at the game, what goes on the field in between the white lines a little bit more, because ultimately that's all we really do at our level. And those of us that operate baseball organizations, yes. Are we talking about the price of hot dogs? Are we talking about how well we're going to clean before and after and during events to keep our fans safe from COVID? You know, are we mandating masks or not? Are we playing in front of fans or not? How fun are our on-field promotions? You know, how can we do on-field promotions in 21 with COVID? You know, fireworks, no fireworks. Yeah, we're doing all those things, but we know fundamentally there's not baseball. White lines don't have players in between them, then we're not doing those things to the same degree. A lot of us still did some things this year, but they weren't the same without having Lorenzo Cain running patrolling center field, or not having Danny Duffy on the mound, not having Alex Gordon here for a rehab assignment, and on and on and on. I could go down the list for years. So, you know, I just think that a little bit more emphasis needs to be put on the game and the innocence of the game.
One of the things, I'm going to ask you, it's a long way to get to what I think is a compliment and a question, but you know, my former career was in the Army, and I know what good leadership looks like. And I think about you, I think about Chris Almendares, who's the president of the Round Rock Express down here. And you all talk about the game the same way. How short-sighted is MLB being by kind of killing the game in some communities? I think about the Yankees moving from Trenton, which was an urban community with the opportunity to attract fans of color to a not so diverse area in Somerset. Do they care about the possible long-term damage of the game 10, 15 years down the road? Are they really just interested in franchise valuation tomorrow and next year?
I think they care. I think they care about the long-term state of the game as it relates to it from a financial perspective. I mean, I think that's what's driving a lot of this. On the diversity perspective, you know, Bud Selig and a number of leaders, Jerry Reinsdorf, going back, you know, 10, 15 years, MLB was actually on the forefront of that. Now, that's not the case. There are other leagues that are leaps and bounds ahead of where we are as an industry in professional baseball. So I can't answer. I can't answer. Are they looking at that? You know, RBI, they say that's an important component in our game, but I would argue, you know, when you lessen the number of rounds of the draft, and when you lessen the number of paid opportunities to play the game throughout the country, and when you're not talking about, okay, that may be happening, but we could also provide additional opportunities by helping college baseball programs, D1 programs that aren't fully funded, get to 11.7 scholarships, or going beyond that and coming up with a new partnership that does fund additional scholarships to get beyond the 11.7. Because if you're an inner city athlete and you play football and baseball, or you play basketball and baseball, or you're a track star and baseball, you have a better opportunity, and you're going to get a better education, and your family's going to be able to afford for you to go to college by playing any of those sports other than baseball. And I think fundamentally we've got to get back to local community baseball, youth baseball, high school, and college to be able to really, truly grow the game from a diverse perspective. but it's going to take dollars. It's going to take money. And because of COVID, you know, it's going to take a lot of creative thinking, because there are a lot of baseball programs that were already teetering pre-2020. And I shudder to think in 2 or 3 years, how many of those programs are going to just simply not be able to exist. And to me, that's where you're going to grow the game from a diverse perspective.
I want to ask a question. I know that you're a Star Wars guy. I'm a Star Wars guy. And, you know, a lot of Star Wars fans cringed when Disney took over Lucasfilm. And I'm a kind of comparing MLB taking over the minors to that. If you think about it from a fan experience, I was thinking about the, because I got my mystery box in, right? So I got the Omaha potholes, the cozy, doing Copa Nights. Do you think from a fan experience, do you see it changing? Do you see MLB kind of throwing some of that fun stuff out? Or do you think that you guys are still going to be able to operate in the same way from where the fan comes to the ballpark experience?
Unknown. Yeah, that's unknown. I'm not going to give you no comment, but I will say unknown. That's something that we do talk about from a couple of angles. Number one, are we going to be able to afford a lot of the promotions we've done? And I say afford it from a standpoint of labor and a standpoint of being able to put money into promotions, because we do know our expenses are going to change as it relates to whatever the new agreement does look like whenever we do get a chance to look at it. And then, you know, from a standpoint of, you know, what goes on the field, you know, again, we anticipate we'll still be able to have access to the field at the proper time when the virus is safe. But there's going to be some changes. There will be. And as far as long-term, you know, we're optimistic. You know, Major League Baseball obviously has a huge following. Their teams have massive Twitter audiences and massive subscribers to email distribution lists. You know, we're optimistic. You know, we're optimistic that the people that support baseball, the soul of baseball, isn't an owner, you know, sitting in Houston, Texas, or wherever he happens to be, or it's not an owner sitting in New York. The soul of baseball sits in Burlington, Iowa, in Jackson, Tennessee, in Visalia, California. And for those that don't believe that, that's where they're missing the boat. And that's why the access to baseball and to be able to watch baseball is so critically important. And I hope that the new context of the Pioneer League and of the New York Penn League and of the Appy League and all the changes we're going through and the new, you know, partnerships, you know, with the current three independent leagues, I hope it works, because we need to keep access in those communities. And if it doesn't, then whatever those teams look like in 21, they may not be around in 24, 25, 26. So that's really my concern, is are we going to be able to shoulder whatever the new expenses and the new model is? And as far as the Disney Star Wars, all I'll say is Mandalorian has taken me back to 77, 1980, 1983. At least it's not taken me back to the original holiday special. It's taken me back to everything other than that. And, you know, to see an episode centered around Tusken Raiders or Jawas, or to see that, wow, Boba Fett's armor lives and so does Boba Fett. And we don't know much more than that right now.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't wake up this morning to see the new episode. I was going to try, but I didn't quite do it. And, you know, so there's hope. There's optimism that that can still happen in our game as well.
Marty, I want to thank you for jumping on this morning. And honestly, like, your leadership in all of this, you know, I think you can measure someone's leadership by what people say about them. And you are very highly revered in this organization. I think it's because you lead with heart. And I think it's because you lead with honesty. And I really just appreciate you being on the show and sharing your views.
Well, appreciate always having me. And, you know, we're big fans. I know Dan Napoli and, you know, the group for 50 Summers. And obviously you've hooked up with Chris and John. But for those four, I want everyone to know that there aren't just 160 minor league teams out there. They're not just another 90 independent clubs. There's not just another 50 some odd summer Woodbat League clubs. Think of the vendors. Think of the ticket takers. Think of all the people that have been going to school in sports management that now are not going to have internship opportunities. Think of all the printing companies. Think of all all your local community, action organizations that are trying to rehab people either coming back from nonviolent crimes or people that have mental health issues that help clean facilities or work on the grounds crew. That's what everybody should be thinking about, because those are the people that are being impacted beyond the 2020 pandemic. And those are the people that I'm really concerned about having less engagement in our game. And I appreciate you telling the story of those. And it's not just about the Omaha Storm Chasers. It's about all those people throughout the country as well.
And now on to close it out, the right-hander from Houston, Texas, James Christopher.
And that does wrap up this episode of Let's Get To. I want to thank everybody for coming on, talking a little bit about the changing landscape of professional baseball in this country. And I know there's a lot of hand-wringing over it, and it's very complicated because I'm very happy for some people and feel very bad for others. And I've grown really close to a lot of people whose lives are going to be different. And I'm at least clinging to the thing that J.D. Davis said about the people in minor league baseball being resilient. They're going to land on their feet, and my hope is, as he said, that the experience as a fan isn't going to change. We are going to be back next week. We will have a really quick episode to finally put a bow on this contraction story, this realignment story, and then we're going to be back here for our much-hyped holiday episode in which we celebrate Christmas and Hanukkah and Festivus. And I'm actually going to finally, for the sake of my marriage, put to bed the Astro sign-stealing scandal in really the only way I know how. So again, that's our episode. Stay safe, stay sane, and let's get to it.